What's up, everyone? Welcome back to My Non-Expert Opinion. I'm your host, Chelsea Reif, and this is the episode so many of you love. It is usually my most highly downloaded episode of the year. It's my personal year in review. Next week, you're going to get my business year in review. And this one really is for all my nosy bees, okay? I am a nosy bee myself, aka a nosy bitch. I love to know the details. I like to know what really happened behind the scenes in your year. Because what you see on Instagram, yes, I share a little transparently sometimes over there, but I don't always share the nitty-gritty details, half of the time because I'm processing it, and half the time I want to wait until I record this episode. So today, get ready, because you are going to get the tea. This is not going to be a fluffy, sugar-coated episode. In this day and age, what I want to hear is what's really going on behind the scenes, and if I want to hear that from other people, then I need to do that myself. So that's what you're getting today, is the tea. Now, before we dive in, just a quick reminder that this month only, anybody who leaves a review on Apple Podcasts is going to be entered into a giveaway to win a one-on-one coaching session with me. So this is 30 minutes and we can talk about whatever you want, from podcast strategy, content strategy, monetizing, creating, etc. Maybe you just want some travel help as well. So all you have to do is go to Apple Podcasts, go to my show, scroll down to the part where it says leave a review, write your review, screenshot it, and then send it to info@chelseareif.com or DM me at Chelsea Reif on Instagram. The reason you should screenshot it before you send it in is because Apple's really weird and it will take like 3 weeks to show up. And I want you to get entered into this month's giveaway. So if you've been a day one listener or you just started tuning in recently and you love this content, please, please consider supporting the show. These written reviews are like currency for podcasters. It's our public facing testimonial page. And every time you leave a review, I basically want to cry. Words of affirmation are my love language. So you might just make my day. All right, let's get into it. So if you're a new listener here, I am a full-time digital nomad. This started really in July of 2022. Even though I'd been traveling and quit my corporate job in 2019, I wasn't technically a digital nomad because I wasn't working for myself online and being nomadic and bopping all over. I did live in Australia for a year in 2019. And then I met my ex, who was German. We moved to Germany. I lived there during most of the pandemic. And then when we broke up, I started traveling around a little bit, moved home to Florida while I reset my life. And then I started really the digital nomad lifestyle. So July 2022, went on this trip with a company called The Remote Year. It was a four-month trip where we went to Croatia, Spain, Portugal, and Cape Town. Every single month, we moved to a new place. Now, I remember thinking, this is fucking incredible. I cannot believe people get to do this. And I was so happy to meet all these other people that were just as insane as I was, that wanted to travel the world, work online, and be able to enjoy different cultures and languages while they were doing all those things. So I did this trip. I had the time of my life. My group was so much fun. We're still all in touch. We text like every single day. There's like a quarter of us that are going to be back together this year in the new year. I had so much fun on that trip, but I was so exhausted after from the level of socializing and constant go, 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 that I basically isolated myself for 3 months. And then I was like, wait, I want to get back out there again. I want to travel with these remote year people and digital nomads and do this whole thing. There was a Black Friday sale, so I booked these two trips to Colombia and Argentina. Fast forward, 2023 starts. It's January. I'm back in Cape Town. And I am obsessed with Cape Town. I'm loving Cape Town. And I realize, wow, this has to come to an end because I booked those two trips to South America. So I started January in Cape Town. Then I actually extended my trip in Cape Town and ended up missing a week in Colombia because that's how much I loved Cape Town and didn't want to leave. I went to Colombia for about 3 weeks. Then I went to Argentina right after that in March. I had so much fun with the group that I met in Colombia and Argentina that I followed them all to Peru because that's where their group was going. I was in Peru in April. My friend was in Mexico City and I couldn't wait to see Mexico City because I heard so many amazing things about it. So then I went to Mexico City. The first half of my year was mostly in South America. I stayed in Mexico City until like honestly early August. And I remember thinking, what the fuck just happened? What did I just put myself through? That's lesson number one, is I cannot travel at that pace anymore. I have so many creative projects that I want to get off the ground. I want to put so much effort into this podcast, into my Substack, into a book of essays. I want to be doing live podcasts and tours and so many things. And it is very hard to do that when you are constantly picking up and moving every 4 weeks. Not only is it hard on the body and the nervous system, But it's a lot of emotional whiplash. You meet people, you bond with them, you become really, really close. And then all of a sudden you're like, okay, bye. Hopefully I see you again in the next 6 months to a year. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. And while you're reflecting and digesting and even grieving emotionally, it takes a toll on you. And you're just supposed to like get back to work and go to the next thing. And I found that really hard to do. So while I love being super nomadic, I am definitely ready to settle down some roots in different places. And let me explain. I do not mean buying a home in America or even signing a year-long lease. I mean, for me and the style of nomad travel I was doing before, settling down means like picking a place for 3 to 6 months. So my plan, we don't know if this is going to happen for sure, but this is what I would want to happen, is that in 2024, I spend Q1 in Cape Town, then I spend Q2 somewhere in Europe, probably Bucharest. That's where I am right now, and I'm loving it. Then I'll go somewhere, because Bucharest, I can only be here 90 days, but it's not in the Schengen zone yet. So then I can go to the Schengen zone, maybe somewhere like Spain, and then spend the last 3 months of the year somewhere else. What's a big deal for me now is my health and my access and capability of getting my creative projects off the ground. So if you've followed me since earlier this year, you know I had a nightmare laptop fiasco. My laptop started being really glitchy in January, and by February, it had completely broken down. I was in Argentina when it completely gave out. I was borrowing people's laptops. I was working on people's iPads. I was begging people in my group, does anyone like not need to work today so I can use your laptop? I was doing client calls on my phone. It was just really chaotic and bad. And it really affected my podcast. If you go back to earlier this year and look at the cadence of episodes, I think I released one a month, honestly, up until like maybe April or May. When my laptop started working again, I was like, you actually need to take this more seriously and have better access to studios and cities that can fix this and cities that have Apple stores, et cetera, because some of the places I was living in just straight up did not have access to Apple stores or even an English-speaking tech that I could talk to. This is a whole separate story, but quick aside is when I got my new laptop in Argentina, it was a Spanish laptop. I'd use my program leader's ID because she was from Argentina and basically have her like sign off on it. I had to completely communicate with this person in person with Google Translate. And I was like, yeah, this is starting to weigh on me. So that's number one, is I just am not going to travel at the pace that I do. And I'm ready for some quarterly homes and roots. Who knows? Maybe I will find a place that I want to stay for more than 3 to 6 months. Maybe I'll find a vibe or a lover or an amazing creative community. But that's the plan for 2024. Speaking of travel, the way I used to travel was purely based on vibes before. It was basically vibes in terms of like sunshine and are there a lot of digital nomads there? Is it affordable? Meaning, is it cheaper than places I would have lived in the US? And how easy is it to get around and public transport? Like, how good is the Wi-Fi? There were, of course, different filters I used, but essentially it was like, can I see myself having fun there, living, laughing, loving, and is it affordable for the money that I make? So after really reviewing this year and making my plans for 2024, the way I'm going to choose places now is actually based more on creative community, access to tech and podcast studios, and how easy is it to get around and maybe fly to other places. Because even if I stay somewhere for 3 months, I am going to want to do weekend trips or take like a think week somewhere. I don't want to just be like sitting in an apartment for 3 months. I still have that fire within me to like run around, but it is imperative now that I'm surrounded by creatives or like-minded people. I also realize that the way I'm searching for creative communities in 2024 and access to like cafes and co-working studios and good Wi-Fi, I also can choose places based on the personal goals I have for myself. So here's what I mean. After Mexico City, I went to Miami for like a day to do a VIP day with a client. Then I went home, which I live in Central Florida, for I think like 2 weeks. Then I went to New York for I think maybe like 8 days. And then I flew to London for 3 weeks. Then I did Manchester for 2 weeks. Then I went on a Greece retreat for a week. I was so burnt out from travel that my body, mind, everything, bank account was like, you need to chill out. So I remember thinking, pick a spot that not many people are going to go to, that is almost isolated and like annoying to get to, so that you can have this downtime. I picked a beach town in Albania. Albania is really up and coming, especially in the digital nomad community. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to go to the Capitol. I'm going to go down to the beach town where you have to take either a bus or like a very expensive cab. It's not that expensive, to be honest, but it's a 4-hour bus ride from the Capitol. Now, while I was there, I booked a super cheap Airbnb. It was off season. It was literally, I think, $700 for 6 weeks. For comparison, when I was like 25 in Chicago, I was paying $1,600 in rent for a studio. So this was a one bed overlooking the beach, beautiful, although it was at the top of a mountain. That's a whole other story. I got really in shape living there. I knew I am here to cocoon and be a hermit and focus on the things that I don't focus on when I'm in high social months. For me, this was like writing, finances, and really getting back to cooking and cultivating some type of nourishment routine for myself. All this time alone in Albania, where, by the way, it was like a tourist town, and because it was off season, there was nothing to do except basically walk around the beach, go dip in the water, and then maybe go to a restaurant. You could go to other beaches and like boat tours on the weekend, but it just wasn't popping socially. And I actually stopped taking on any new clients at that time too. I literally stopped all calls, discovery calls, consults, and nothing was happening. I got so much out of that 7 weeks. I started writing daily, 750 words. I started taking my finances more seriously and really started to look at things in terms of what was coming in, what was going out, what percentages am I putting to things. I'll get to this in a whole other bullet, but my personal finance game completely transformed in this little hermit period. And I also just felt so much more clear-headed and replenished. I was cooking for myself every day, practically breakfast, lunch, and dinner, super healthy, routined. I was on kind of like a gut cleanse at this time too. So I was taking my supplements. I would wake up and I had this whole routine. I would read for an hour, write for an hour, clean and tidy up, go down to the beach. It was a very Mediterranean dream. I have always pictured myself like writing by the ocean and developing a self-love practice and being able to actually have that time with myself and reflect on everything that's happened this year and in years past. And that time in Albania showed me I can start to plan my travels like that. So if I want to work, for example, on personal finance and really have the time and space to take a breather, it probably doesn't make sense to go to a very, very chaotic city that's also expensive, right? I wouldn't recommend like going to New York or London to do that. I would go put yourself in a more isolated place where you're not going to be distracted socially, where you can sit down and look at things. And this leads me to point number three. Becoming financially baller was a huge goal of mine, probably through the first half of the year when I realized the pace I was traveling at and the activities we were doing. I was like, this isn't just a matter of making more money to be able to afford all these things. It's actually knowing what's going out and what is the allocation of what my income is into what I'm spending on, and does it align with my values? If you know me personally, you know I don't really value designer things. I don't want designer jewelry. I don't have a designer bag. Trust me, it's not a money block. I just don't value those things. I would rather spend that money at a really nice restaurant or go on a really cool experience, or even just like spend it on my friends and be like, you know what? Let me pick up the bill. I've got this dinner. That's what I like to spend my money on. So the first half of the year when I was traveling with Remote Year, something really hit me that a lot of people that go on these trips, it's kind of like a 1 month or maybe 4 month thing that they're taking a break from their normal life in America or wherever they're from. Where for me, I'm like, this is my full-time lifestyle. This is not a vacation. And the way I was spending was like I was on vacation. So I was booking all the experiences, all the Michelin star restaurants. In Peru, we were bawling the fuck out on restaurants. I was like, you need to get your finances together or you're going to be one of these people that pretends that they can do all these things. And then you look at your credit card statement and somehow you've maxed it out. And I did not want to put myself in that position. I've put myself in that position before. You can go listen to an episode earlier this year. I had maxed out my credit card the year before and was completely irresponsible just because I was trying to keep up with people. That time in Albania was really important for me to understand my personal finances. And I tapped the help of my brother, Austin, shout out. He is so good with finances. A few years ago, he kind of went on this financial mastery journey and he paid off all his student loan debt. He saved so much money. He bought a house with his fiance. He proposed. He's incredibly savvy with his budgeting. Like he's never scrambling or overdrafting or anything. And I was like, I'm going to ask him for help. So me, him, and one of my sisters, we had this money meeting. And I don't know why talking about it with my family started to give me a little bit more investment into figuring out my finances because it started to make me see bigger picture where all our futures were going. And I don't know, this sounds maybe a little bit morbid, but I was like, you know, one day my parents are going to pass away. And anytime we're in a real financial bind, like 911 emergency, they will help us. And I'm like, what's going to happen when they're no longer there and can bail us out? I'm the oldest. And so I always feel like I have this little bit of pressure to be the better example and show the younger ones how it's done. And my brother is the third sibling. So this really motivated me to be like, I want to be on his level too, where both of us are considered these like very financially savvy kids in the family. We had this money kind of like accountability chat. And I think this was a big piece of why I started really seeing some progress in my personal finances was I was celebrating all little things. So even if it was paying like $50 off of a student loan or putting my auto payment on for credit cards, I celebrated that. Even if I was paying the minimum, which by the way, I don't, I always pay more. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to celebrate this because it keeps me excited. This is a lesson that I think maybe anyone could learn is if you feel like you are trying to work on something, whether it's your finances, health, etc., try to find an accountability group that you can celebrate with. My brother and sister were so good at celebrating me, being like, that's awesome. You're killing it. Congrats. And I'm very motivated by words of affirmation. That's why I've done this podcast for 6 years. I love the DMs. I love your reviews. I love your emails. So that type of feedback was so, so helpful to me. After I finally looked at my finances, developed this little accountability group with some of my siblings, and started listening to Ramit Sethi's podcast, I've kind of shouted him out before. And I think everybody should listen to his podcast because he does coaching for couples. And the way he gets into their psyche about money is really what landed with me. Like, why do we rack up credit cards when we pay them off? Or why do we keep putting ourselves in situations where we owe people money? Or why do we hide debt from our partners? These are all things that I'm fascinated by. So listening to that podcast and watching his Netflix show, watching how like irresponsible people were with money to then becoming like so responsible. He did a follow-up show where someone had paid off like $90,000 of credit card debt from a side hustle. I was just so motivated by his words. I also just got his book and his journal. And I feel like his philosophy started to click with me, where his whole thing is spend extravagantly on the things you love and cut back ruthlessly on the things that you don't enjoy. So this goes back to my point of like designer clothes and things like that. I also just can't really buy that many pieces of clothing because of my travels, or my luggage would be overweight. So when I thought about where do I want to put my money, it's not to shopping and clothes and getting new things all the time because of the weight of my luggage. It's actually experiences, restaurants, travel, etc. I think sometimes, you all tell me if you see it this way, I think sometimes online on my Instagram, it maybe looks like I live like a bougier lifestyle than I do. And I'm here to remind you, I lived in some of the cheapest countries in the world this year, Albania. I mean, I went to lunch one day there. It was $4. I thought it was a mistake. I was like, did you guys forget like a one or a four? Like, what's going on here? And they're like, that's it. And it was like chicken skewers, a side of bread, potatoes, like insane. So Albania, Colombia, Cape Town, Peru, a lot of these places are pretty affordable. Now, of course, you can always find things that are more expensive and cheaper. But overall, the cost of living in majority of the places I lived this year were at least 30% less than places I was living in the US. By keeping my cost of living low and making more money this year, I was able to upgrade my lifestyle and invest in more business resources. This focus period too in Albania, where I was like, get your financial shit together, was so motivating too, because I built a system that worked for me, not just like downloading someone's template and plugging in my numbers. So because of this process, my credit score has gone up by almost 50 points. I've paid off over $5,000 of credit card debt. I've saved $5,000. I know exactly where my money is going, and I'm actually excited to plan. This is like the craziest part. I used to hate looking at my bank account or money. My money management system was basically check your account every day to make sure it's not overdrafted. Seriously, that's how it probably was in like 2019, 2020. And in the past year, it turned into like, make sure you can pay all your business expenses not on your credit card. And then it shifted into, okay, let's try to keep a certain amount floating in there, like $300 to $500. And slowly and slowly, I've been able to raise my energetic minimum. The way I would explain it is like, what's a number in your bank account you're comfortable with? And if it goes under that, you start going in a little bit like panic mode. I had to test this a lot, right? I didn't like figure this out once. I'm like, boom, got it. Actually, what happened was I thought I had this incredible money management plan where I would pay all my debt, all my business expenses, everything first. And then I would leave myself this little pot of spending money. But naturally, things come up where I'm like, oh, shit, I forgot about that one expense, or like that software I wanted to upgrade. And now I only have the money in my account. Like, little things happen all the time. And what ended up happening was that little pot of money I had left, I was trying to manage it on a weekly basis because my brain was like, that's easy to do. You keep this money in your account weekly and that's your weekly spending. But with all these little random miscellaneous things happening, what would honestly happen is I would end the week at like $20. There were times where I was like praying to God a client payment cleared because I'm like, you have $20 in your bank account, but you made $10,000 this month. Like, it did not make sense. I honestly started to feel some shame about where I'm like, how are you making the money you're making, but your bank account looks like you're broke? You know what really prompted this too was I hated when I needed someone to help me get money out of the bank because my card wasn't working, or let's say like they got the hotel and needed me to Venmo them back. I would always have like a little heart palpitation because I'm like, I don't know that I have the money in my actual checking account to Venmo them right now. And I feel embarrassed being 32 years old saying, hold on, can you wait until next week when my client payment clears? Because again, it sounds like I'm struggling for money, which just wasn't the case. I'll talk about this more in my business review podcast, but to give you just a quick insight, I was averaging around $10,000 a month in sales and income. So to end the week with $20 and not be able to Venmo someone like $100, I was just like, I don't want to be that person anymore. So my energetic minimum, I knew needed to increase. I needed to be comfortable with not seeing just $20 in my bank account. If you know anything about me, I work in baby steps. I like to turn up the heat a little bit, let my nervous system adjust, get comfortable, then turn it up more. I don't go like, woo, let's try to have $5,000 in the bank account when we just had $20. Like, that's insane. So I went to like 300. I was like, okay, let's have 300 in the account. Then it went to 500. And then somehow I kept getting back in this position where it wasn't working. And so I realized you need to change things up. So now what I do is I have this whole Notion page where I listed out every single one of my business expenses, every single one of my fixed costs or what I want to spend on fixed costs, right? I don't have an apartment. So I try to say, okay, let's keep your rent around 1,000. If you need to go a little bit further, like my max is 1,200. And if I go under that, then that's great. I can put extra money towards debt or something that I want to invest in. So when I shifted this system around, that's when planning became fun. And I started loving having meetings with myself. Again, this is a wild 180 from where I was even earlier this year. I was in New York City having dinner with some friends and this place only took cash. And for some reason, all the people I was with didn't have their debit card. And they're like, Chelsea, could you get this one? I'm like, sure. It was like $150. And I remember I had to look at my phone and discreetly see if I had $150. I think I literally had $180. And I was like, honestly, if I didn't have that money, one of them would have probably had to leave and go to the ATM, or I would have had to like quickly transfer from savings or do something weird with Zelle. And I was just like, I'm not going to be this person anymore. Now, I want to stop right here for a second. I know I've been really going on about this point, but this was really a huge deal for me. If you're hearing this right now and you're like, damn, I am that person. I have to check my account that I don't overdraft every day. I am the person that if I need to Venmo someone $50, I have to wait until my next paycheck. Or I do have to check my account at the table and see if I can even pay someone back. I want you to know you can change. You don't have to hold on to that story. I became almost like comfortable with owning this identity of like, crazy me. I just spend and spend and not sure where it goes. Like, hopefully I figure it out. And eventually, again, I really think the meeting with my siblings helped because I could see like all our futures together. And that's what I would encourage you to do is like, what's the bigger picture? Ramit always says this is like, what is your rich life? And the reason I would like why he asked that question is he's not saying, oh, I want to drive a Bentley and live in a mansion. Ramit himself actually rents his home and drives a car that he's had since like college. And once I heard that, it expanded my mind to be like, wow, living a rich life doesn't have to mean that I live in bougie places and spend all my money on bags and do all these things. Like, again, keeping up with the Joneses, my rich life was being able to go to a dinner, pay for it, have a big birthday party and cover all the expenses, fly my parents out to come visit me in all the countries I'm in. Even right now, I could get emotional. Wow, wasn't expecting that. You can see like this emotional investment is what really motivated me to start taking my finances seriously. I'm really drilling home on this point, but I really, really encourage you to find a bigger vision outside of yourself than your goalposts being like, hopefully I can just make it through this week. Because I do think there's something to be said of when you have a bigger emotional investment into what your goal is, you will start to move things around and move resources and energy around to be able to get you there. Again, I really think you should check out Ramit's podcast. He helps couples in extreme financial distress. He helps people that literally can like barely pay rent and are in thousands of dollars of debt, get out of it and find better jobs and increase their pay. I honestly credit like 70% of my improvement in finances because of everything that I consumed from him and my brother helping me understand what I should prioritize. Should it be savings, credit card debt, investments? And eventually my brother drilled it into me. You should have a savings built up in case you go into emergency, you don't rack up your credit card again. And that really hit me. As I get older and travel, I am going to be exposed to more potential emergencies. And I don't know, again, that idea that I could be abroad and like need to go to the hospital, I don't want to put that on a credit card. I want to have the finances, which is what really started to kick me into gear. Okay, my God, you're like, we get it. You worked on your finances, but I don't know. I think this is honestly the biggest deal for me because for literally my entire life, I've been someone that's like, just do whatever you want now and figure it out later. And sometimes I figured it out, sometimes I haven't. And it's usually erred on the side where I haven't. And I just did not want to be that person anymore. Okay, let's switch gears. Let's talk a little bit about dating, relationships, etc. So I have been single now for 2 years, 2.5 years, actually. And there are periods where I'm so not interested in dating because I'm so creatively fulfilled by my podcast, by my writing, by my friendships. Like, I love going to dinners with people. I love traveling with people. I love girls' nights. Like, I am very fulfilled in a lot of areas of my life. And there's times where I'm almost fulfilled to the point where I'm like, I don't even want to talk to any guys. Like, I'm not interested in dating. However, this year, I was like, you know what? I am ready to like date someone or I'm open to meeting someone. And so I started dating a lot more at the end of 2022, especially during remote year. And then come 2023, I was like, I'm going to have fun with people. Like, I am traveling all over the world. If someone wants to ask me out or someone wants to get coffee, let's do that. So I was going on dates with guys from all over the world, Cape Town, Colombia, Poland, France. And it was really fun because it started to teach me like what I like and don't like and what I'm going to put up with and not put up with. And something that I learned, which is lesson number 4, is that I'm truly no longer interested in casual situationships, especially if I know deep down that I like the person. We all know when we have a crush on someone, right? You get a little bit nervous and like a little bit of a butterfly when they walk in the room and you kind of like light up when they text you. To me, that's a crush. And I remember having certain crushes during the year and the person telling me straight up, I'm not looking for anything serious. I just want casual. And my self-esteem / anxious attachment would kind of go into overdrive. And it's sad to say, and I'll talk about what I learned through this, is that I would kind of agree to it, even though I didn't want to agree to it. So I would be like, sure, let's do casual, because my mind was like, well, at least if you're casual, you still have access to them and they'll still want to like be with you because you're being so casual. And then in my delusional brain, I was like, maybe they'll fall in love with me and maybe they won't want to be casual anymore. And actually they're going to be like, you're the one that changed my mind about casual relationships, and I knew we needed to be together. I think every woman goes through this at some point where you're like, I'm the one that's going to change him. He's going to fall in love with me. It's going to be a Disney fairy tale. He's going to say this at the vows at our wedding, that I am the one that changed his mind about situationships. However, that did not happen. Okay, that did not happen. I was not being honest with myself. I was not addressing the red flags. And so I ended up being in a situationship, which honestly drew out way longer than it needed to. I feel like the time we spent together physically early on was fine. And then as it kept going and going and we were getting more emotionally involved, the signals were so hot and cold. It was very like, ooh, I could see this going somewhere. And then the next day it would be like, does this person even like me? Or are we just friends? Or is he like friend zoning me? And this back and forth took such a hit on my self-esteem and mental health that honestly, Mexico City for me was like healing, regrouping, trying to find my footing again and realizing like, you don't have to put yourself in these situations or deal with them. It's okay if you lose them and they want to say goodbye because you're not agreeing to be casual. Great, then there's the door and don't let it hit you on the way out. My mom always said that. And I love that quote because it's just like, if you don't want to be with me, why would I be bending over backwards to be with you Because if that actually worked out and you all of a sudden were like, yeah, you know what? I do want to be together. I'm going to feel resentful of myself that I was basically being a circus monkey for you to be with me. So when you're in it, by the way, I know so many people listening right now are probably in situationships or just got out of one or like feel one coming on. It is very hard to get out of, especially if you're anxiously attached, because the wound for anxiously attached people is being abandoned. So you're like, I would rather deal with the breadcrumbs and the bare minimum than completely have this person walk away and I have to like start from square one. The thing is, the longer you stay in it and the more mind games you play and the more hot and cold signals you get, I really feel like every time that happens, it's like a little hammer chipping away at your self-esteem. And this is how you honestly start to get in a bit of like emotionally abusive relationships. I would say in 2016, I dated a guy that 100% we should have never been together. And I just let it go on and on because my self-esteem was so low at that point that I was like, I would rather have this boyfriend that's attractive and hot and like sometimes funny, even though he treats me pretty terribly and is incredibly jealous and insecure, than try to like get back out there and date. Like I actually thought logically it was better to be in that situation. Unfortunately, you know, there is still a lot of messaging that celebrates couplehood, which I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. But it does start to weigh on single women because the question we always get is, why are you single? You're such a catch. Why are you single? You have all these things going for you. Why are you single? And so you start to be like, why am I single? As if single is this derogatory negative thing. And so when you meet someone that like checks, I don't know, 6 of the 10 boxes, but the other 4 are terribly red flags, you're like, well, I'm not single anymore. And people like to check in. How are you? And blah, blah, blah. Oh my gosh, that's so cute. Tell me more. And you start to get a lot of attention and it can be hard to let go of that attention. I've been in this situation multiple times where I'm like, I like texting the girls in the chat and being like, here's what happened last night and he did this. But then it would again always go back to hot and cold and mixed signals. And the reality is like deep, deep down in my heart of hearts, in my most intuitive hits, I knew this person is not going to be my husband, my long-term partner, my forever, because I could almost visualize how it would go. Right? I always think when you're dating, that's the trial period. And then when you really commit, you just locked yourself into an annual subscription. Like that's how I like to think of it. So I'm like, wait, if the trial period is already this chaotic, what is it going to be like when he commits? Now, I know there's probably people listening right now that are like, well, my guy actually did change after he committed. He just needed a little bit of encouragement. I'm not saying you have to cut off every single person that doesn't meet your 10 out of 10 checklist. There's obviously something to be said about communicating directly and speaking your needs and working on things together. However, if off the bat, you are constantly getting told you don't want anything serious, they want to hook up with other people, they're treating you kind of like a friend one day and then kind of like a girlfriend the next day, you need to get yourself out of that as fast as you can. Go heal, get a therapist, go on a healing retreat, start meditating, start dancing, and start surrounding yourself with people that can lift you up. I felt so lucky to be in Mexico City when I was like really trying to disentangle myself from this situation because I had so many friends there. Half the friends I traveled with in the group, half the people I traveled with earlier in the year were in Mexico City. One of my good friends from my 4-month trip was there. We lived together. And then Mexico City is so healing. Like if you know Mexico City, you know what I'm talking about. There are so many wellness and spiritual practitioners there, and that helped me so much. I was going to breathwork classes. I did a shroom sound bath. I was going to Pilates literally like every day. I was walking outside in the greenery. I was cooking all the time. And I think that accelerated my healing, honestly, so much more because of the environment. You can literally choose your environment to align with what you want to get out of it. I'm definitely speaking in digital nomads right now, and I understand there's some people listening that are like, I can't do that. I have a job. I have a kid. I'm in this situation that I could never even like leave. And if you're in a situation like that, then what I would recommend is finding these environments online. I have an online therapist. I talk to her every week. I've never missed a week of therapy in like 2.5 years. I'm in so many memberships creatively where I'm very creatively fulfilled. When I was in a situation where I couldn't like move around, for example, lockdown, I would just do things online. I would literally take dance classes online. I took yoga online. I was in online forums. So sometimes if you can't physically move your environment, try to find it online or a group chat or something. There are so many free communities on Slack and Telegram and Discord And I really think when you realize you're not the only one going through something, you start to mend a little bit faster. So yes, this is all to say, now if I am going to start dating someone and off the bat, if I have a crush and they're like, no, I just want to be like super casual, I don't want anything serious, I'm like, okay, let's just end it right now. I'd rather just be friends and cut our losses instead of getting emotionally invested and then have it be weird down the line. Now, I'm also not really saying that I'm being this person that's like, what do you want? Like off the bat, I'm not coming in with this like brashness of demanding that they tell me they're serious or not, but you can usually feel out someone and you can ask them like, you know, here's why I'm dating. Why are you dating? Or you can see it on their profile on Hinge. Right now on Hinge, I don't know. Right now, it depends on where you're traveling to, but I can see the part where it says, what are you looking for? If anyone says undecided, even if their profile is hilarious, they're cute, they love animals, they travel, they have everything going for them, if it says undecided or like figuring out my dating goals, I'm like, no, I'm not putting up with this. So I've become way more ruthless on dating apps. It's honestly reduced the pool of people I can date, right? Because I'm not entertaining every single person, but I do feel like that's helping me get to the gold. And getting to the gold takes a little bit of mining, right? You do need to sift through a lot to get to that piece of gold, but I'm very confident now that the person I'm meant to be with, I will find because of the work I've done. It's also, if you think about it this way, kind of silly for me to put this much into healing and building my self-esteem and having years of therapy and cutting off all these guys and breaking up with guys that I couldn't see myself with, to just like completely backtrack and end up with some guy that barely wants to commit to me. That would be insane. Like, I'm just thinking about it out loud. If I was like, sure, let's have a 12-month situationship, it's like, why the fuck did you spend all this money on therapy then and hire an attachment coach and take courses and read books and listen to podcasts if you're going to end up with just like any Joe Schmo that's going to look your way? I think this takes a lot of patience because the pool of people I'm dating now is going to be smaller because of the standards I've set. But that also means I'm probably going to have like a higher quality batch of people to choose from if I'm putting all these lenses on it. I should also add here, I'm still having a lot of fun in other departments, okay? I have gone out in Bucharest. I have made out with some guys. I have hooked up with some guys. I still have a little party girl in me. Like, I like going to bars and clubs and like making out with someone on the dance floor and then maybe going home together. Like, I don't know. That's kind of part of the chaotic travel lifestyle to me. And I'm not someone that's just like sitting at home, knitting and waiting for Prince Charming to find me or being like, oh, screw all guys. There's no good guys out there. I'm like, I don't know. I've had a lot of fun meeting guys. It's actually super fun now to go on dates or hook up with someone and be like, wow, I love this about this person. Or this is a trait I didn't even know I wanted. And now I have knowledge of it. This is something I'm really going to put into my value system when I start dating. Also, because I'm a creative person and create content online, I have started to realize there are people that are comfortable with that and there's people that are not comfortable with that or just don't respect it. And that's something I take into account too now is if I say I'm a podcaster and I help people launch podcasts and I have this online business and they kind of like give me a side eye or scoff or like turn up their nose or like, wait, what? Immediate red flag. That's not going to work. If they're like, whoa, that's so sick. Tell me more about that. That's a green light. And I will tell you, if you're listening to this and you're like, wait, people have like said that? Yes, there are a lot of people that don't take what I do seriously. I think they think I have like a little business and a little podcast and I'm doing little projects with little clients and that's cute. Like, I actually remember a guy from college maybe 3 or 4 years ago when I was posting a lot about my other coaching business and he's like, your little project looks so cool. And I was like, fuck off. Like, I can't wait until you see me on like a banner in Times Square. And you're going to be like, oh, that wasn't a little project. That's something that's important to me too, is that if I am someone who is going to be a little more like public facing and do a live podcast tour or be on stage, that my person is in the back cheering me on, waiting for me with flowers, not like, oh, I don't know if I want to go or like, we'll see if I can make it. Like, that's, I'm not doing that anymore. Now, it sounds like I've dated a million people like this. This hasn't happened. It's just been a few people that it's been enough people that it has become a talking point for this podcast, right? So this has happened before. And I've also dated amazing people who are like, I don't care what the fuck you do, like go off. It's amazing. I love what you're doing. I would bet on you in any situation. And that's the type of person that I'm looking for. That's going to be like, oh, that's your dream and vision. How can we work on that together and build a beautiful creative life together? Okay, Number five, if you've listened to this podcast for a long time, you know I highly value leisure and fun and plan my weeks accordingly. I plan this the same way I plan my client meetings. If anything, I almost do it first. So I know that I like dance classes, I like art classes, I like dinner with friends. I like to kind of hold my evenings to see if I want to do something social, but I'm not necessarily like this extroverted social butterfly that needs a new event every week. But at least once a week, I like to do something with like my body or my hands. So whether that's a pottery class or painting or a dance class or cooking, something where I'm not on a laptop staring at a screen, I have to get that in my calendar. Recently in Romania, it's been dance classes. In Peru, I did a lot of cooking classes. So I look at when that class is, book it. And I like to book it because then it holds me accountable because usually you can't cancel or you get like no refund or they actually charge you. So I like to book it and then I plug it in my calendar. I color code it yellow. And then when I look at my calendar on a weekly basis, I can see, oh yeah, you have a lot of yellow in your calendar. That's amazing. You can see that you're living in alignment with your values, which one of them is leisure and one of them is fun. I also do not work on the weekends at all. Absolutely refuse. I think the last time I worked on a weekend, it was maybe like a Sunday night between 4 to 7 because sometimes I have these creative bursts around then and no one's really doing much Sunday 4 to 7. And I'll work on like writing a Substack or editing a video or something, but I'm not answering emails and getting back to clients and texting. Like I do not do that. Like my weekends are sacred to me. And that's when I'll do a lot of my leisurely and fun things too. If I were to pull up my calendar right now, which I actually have it right in front of me. Let's look at it. This week, my leisure, fun, etc. On Tuesday, I went to an international meetup where a bunch of expats came. Tonight, I'm doing a twerk dance class. Last week, I had a girls' dinner with my friend. We also went to the Christmas market. I went to drinks with friends on Friday. I did a dance class last Wednesday. This upcoming weekend, we're having a birthday party tomorrow. Next week, I have 2 dance classes booked in. This is how important it is to me that I can just look at my calendar and tell you. It's not something like, oh, one day when I have more time, I hope I could book a class or go to that concert. I literally treat them like client meetings. It is that important to me because if not, what is the point of all this? What's the point of making money and building my schedule and creating relationships with people and really auditing my time and building my own schedule if I can't do what I want with my schedule and my money? So this is something that's definitely going to continue in 2024. I think I did a really good job this year of tracking it and color coding it, and that's only going to keep happening in 2024. It's something I'm very proud of because I feel like when I started my business, it was to be able to have this type of lifestyle where I get to choose how I want to spend my time. And to me, this is like one of the biggest markers of succeeding in that. Okay, number 6. Remember how I was just talking about dating and how I'm having so much fun and I'm meeting all these people and it's great and I'm seeing what works and what doesn't. I think I've also developed a bit of a toxic personality trait, which I never thought I would have, but it is the grass is greener mentality, especially with dating. I tend to think that if I'm dating someone and it doesn't work out, that there's just someone better around the corner. Now, I don't necessarily think this is a bad thing all the time because it keeps me in quite an abundant mindset where I'm like, it's fine. You're not going to be devastated if this person and you don't work out. It's just a preference thing. Like your preferences didn't line up. Your compatibility didn't line up. You don't want the same things out of life. Just like some people like vanilla and some hate chocolate. That's how this relationship is. You just weren't the perfect swirl and you move on. So I think in that way, it's actually become quite healthy where I don't get devastated by things ending. This is a wild, wild turn of events compared to last year. Quick story time. I met this guy on Hinge. We were dating for a few weeks. We had spent a weekend together in Portugal, and then I spent some time with him in London. And I could tell it wasn't working out. And I think I was just trying to force it because we had spent some time together and he was very smart, very motivated, ambitious. Worked at an incredible startup that was like helping cure cancer. Like he was just a really great person. And I think in my mind, I was like, this is the type of person you should be with. So you should be making it work. And this is kind of an instance where it can be hard when you're dating, where you're like, nothing really bad is happening. He actually treats me pretty well, but there's just something that's not lining up. And I could just feel that after we had spent some time in London together. So when I left, I had gone to Greece. I remember he was being very standoffish, very weird. Ignoring me when I said we should FaceTime or catch up and being kind of like cold. And I'm like, okay, I don't need you to spell this out for me. You know, like I can tell we're not on the same page. And instead of him saying something, I said something and I was like, hey, this is really working out. I would love to be friends, but romantically, this isn't like really happening. I'm sure I said something much more eloquent than that. I remember this is kind of embarrassing. We had only dated for like 2 months. But I remember sending that text message and then shutting my door and sobbing, crying my eyes out as if I had just broken off an engagement of 10 years. I called my mom hysterical, literally like hyperventilating, like, I can't believe it. Like that type of crying. Okay. This is how dysregulated my nervous system would get when I would be in the dating period with someone and it wouldn't work out. It would go into overdrive. I would react so illogically for what the situation was and honestly ruin my whole day or week. Luckily, at that period, I was at like a festival in Greece, so it was a lot easier to recover because I met all these cool people and the events were really fun, etc. But had I just been like in a regular Airbnb where I was just hanging out by myself, I think it would have ruined my whole weekend. So when I'm talking about this grass is greener mentality, I do think it's helped me get out of that where I'm not like devastated if something doesn't work out. In the past few weeks, I've talked to people, they don't live here, they leave, we get along really well, it's not a fit, I don't like them. And I'm like, it's fine. I do think that's helped me. However, now when I meet someone, I can be almost a little too quick to judge if I like them or not. And then I bow out at like the first sign of any red flag or like not compatibility. I'm not talking about the major red flags, right? Where if we're like completely not aligned with our futures or how we spend money or kids or whatever, right? That's like a whole different story. There's obvious red flags that are deal breakers and things that are non-negotiables. However, this new personality trait, I'm kind of like, oh, well, if I don't meet someone in Romania, who cares? I'm going to Copenhagen in a few weeks. And I probably shouldn't even look in Copenhagen because right after that, I'm going to Madrid for 10 days. But I'm only going there with my family. So who cares? I'm going to Cape Town for 3 months. And I'm not going to stay in Cape Town longer than that. And it doesn't matter if it doesn't work out in Cape Town, because then I'll come back to Europe. And then who cares if it doesn't work out in Europe, because then I'll go somewhere else. Like, it's become this thing where I can see myself becoming a bit like non-committal and finding almost like any excuse to make things not work. Again, I don't know that I've really met someone that I'm like, wow, I really think we could make this work. And I've liked them so much that I want to. But I can tell just from immediately meeting people off the bat, I'm like, no, next, like that MTV show. Next. Oh, you said one thing wrong. Next. Oh, you don't like this. Next. And I actually used to hate that. Like on TikTok when girls were like, oh, he was wearing these sneakers. It gave me the ick. He was wearing this stupid watch. And I almost like rolled my eyes. I'm like, what are these girls talking about? I do still think that's pretty superficial. But I feel like I've become that way with just little personality things where I'm like, oh, they do this and not this. Nope. And I don't really think that's healthy because I'm not perfect. If someone were to judge me that way and was like, oh, she does this, but not this, next, I would be like, wait, what the fuck? Like, I bring so much more to the table than that one little piece of pie of my personality. And what I offer is much more than that. I'm almost creating this like unhealthy expectation that this person needs to be perfect 10 out of 10. And if not, I just move on. And I definitely don't think that's healthy. So this is something I'm going to be working on in therapy. I will be talking about this next week in my therapy appointment because I don't want to be that person. I want to be able to work things through with people, have a relationship, experience direct communication. And now I'm talking about out loud, a little therapy session. I'm like, maybe that's it too, is that I'm like not really ready for the direct communication that needs to happen in relationships. And I need to start working on that. So just a little year in review point that I need to work on personally. All right, the next one is going back to values. Comfort, I realize, is a super high value for me. I realized this after I worked with an attachment coach named Sarah Cohen. She runs the Lit AF Relationships podcast. She is incredible. She helped me so, so much during that situationship period where I was like really on a chaotic roller coaster. And we did a needs assessment. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? And she's like, you don't know your needs, so you need to figure them out. And I'm like, why do I need to know my needs? Like, this is a foreign concept to me. I don't know if this is crazy to anyone, but I did not understand. So we did this needs assessment. And one of the biggest ones that kept coming up was comfort. I really value comfort. And I think in the past, I've shied away from maybe owning that or like admitting to that because I was so proud of being scrappy and resourceful and like, who cares? I can sleep on a bunk bed in the middle of the night. Or, oh my God, when I was 21, I slept on a towel on the floor. I think I've done that twice, actually. Like, I got so used to that where I was like, who cares? Like, you can just live wherever. And I kind of prided myself on that. So coming to terms with like comfort is actually a high need for me was quite interesting because now it drives where I am traveling to, the places I live, even like the cafes I work at or the places I go to restaurants at. I'm like, the environment needs to feel like comfortable and cozy no matter where I'm at now. So this is a huge factor now in the way I travel, even the way I dress, right? Like today. I'm wearing sneakers. You can't see them, but they're very comfortable. My jeans are like stretch jeggings. This shirt is the most comfortable thing ever because it's like stretchy. You know what I mean? I think for me, there was this block I had. Like if I'm asking for my comfort needs to be met, I'm being like bougie or asking for too much or being unreasonable. And I'm sure depending on certain settings, I probably do feel that. I probably do come off that way, right? This happened in my co-living space. I was like, do we have thicker pillows? These are like paper thin. And they're like, oh, I guess, yeah, we'll see. I think we all have the same pillows. And then they ended up finding thicker pillows. I literally was having like neck issues. I would wake up and be like, can I turn my head? I've dealt with this for a week. And I'm like, I cannot live here for 6 weeks and live on these pillows. So I asked for the new pillows. And then the guy came in and gave me new ones and made a joke like, whoa, like high demand client or something. And I'm like, oh, see, those are little comments that tend to sting like a little paper cut because you're like, this is exactly why I didn't want to ask. But by not asking, it's like, so what? I'm going to go 6 weeks sleeping on these paper thin pillows and end up having like truly neck problems because I already have them from traveling and looking at my laptop all day. And I realized, well, that's because we're at different stages of our lives. We value different things. Some people don't care. And they're like, I can sleep anywhere. It doesn't fucking matter. And I'm like, I'm willing to own now that I'm 32 and I'm okay with enjoying my comfort. This is also kind of a reason why I want to settle down in certain places and be cognizant of where I'm living and like even what the bed situation is, because I just don't want to sleep in like shitty beds anymore that I might like fall off of or my feet are hanging off because I'm so tall. I just don't want to do that anymore. So this is huge, is owning this level of comfort, being okay if someone makes a comment like he did, or maybe coming off bougie to some people. It's just funny to me too, because I'm like, I feel like anyone that truly knows me knows I'm really not bougie. To be honest, I'm quite frugal in some areas and even cheap sometimes, but I spend on things I value. I spend money on food. I spend money on my podcast. I spend money on resources. It goes back to the Ramit thing of like spend extravagantly on things you love and then cut back on things you don't really love. Comfort is one of the things that I now love. Okay, we have three more. You still with me? Number eight is at some point you need to start building decompression periods into your schedule to reflect and digest on what's happening. This year in Cape Town, I remember in February, I was there. I had just cooked this really amazing meal. I was out on my balcony. It was sunny outside. The birds were chirping. And it was one of those moments where you look around and you're like, wow, like I got myself here. I built this. Like I created the income to get me to this spot. I chose this place to live. I cooked this meal. I have this schedule where I can even take an hour lunch break and not feel bad about it. It was really one of those aha moments where it's like, this is kind of what you have been working for. Is having control of your schedule, spending your time how you want it to in a place that you love. And I realized, what is the chase of making more money if I already have the lifestyle I want? At this period too, I had two clients that had just signed with me that had paid me like huge deposits up front. And I had all these other clients on recurring monthly payment plans. So financially, I was very secure. I had just done a photo shoot, I think, in Cape Town. So I just felt very confident. I had been weightlifting. Go listen to my old episodes where I talk about how I used to party all the time and then started taking on this athlete character. It's called From Blackout to Barbells. So I started taking my health more seriously. It was just one of those things where everything felt good. My mental health, my physical health, spiritually, financially, like everything was going well. And I'm just like, okay, so then why do you feel the need to rush back into work and generate more sales? And I know people are going to argue to get ahead, to build more financial stability, to give back, to save more, to invest more, 100%. Those are all amazing reasons. However, at that point in time, I was like, this is enough for me. I'm okay with this being enough. I have more than I need in my bank account. I can pay all my bills. I have everything booked for the next 2 months because I had already booked my remote year trip. So I basically had already paid rent for 2 months ahead. We don't need to get into that like grind and hustle culture. You don't need to have a 50K month. You don't need to become a millionaire this year. Most people want those things to be able to live the lifestyle that I feel like I had. Most of us want to make more money so we can travel more, eat out more, spend more time with our friends, spoil our family members, give back more. And at that point, I was doing all that. So I was like, this is it. I don't need to work 60-hour weeks. I don't get the point of that. What's the point of that if you're not going to ever take time to enjoy it? And I know there's this idea, once I have a 50K month, once I make $100,000 a year, once I become a millionaire, then I will take the time off. Then I will start booking those things. Then I will have dinner with friends. I think that's backwards. I think you need to build that into your lifestyle now. I am obsessed with glow graphics on Instagram. She found love last year while she was traveling, and she was a full-time nomad as well. She built an incredible online business, and she's been sharing bits and bobs of her relationship from like timelines and conversations they had and how she set standards. And something that she shared too is you have to realize, especially as an entrepreneur, there are periods where you need to just pause and almost have like a mini retirement and be like, I did it. I'm good. I have enough. We can rest. I'm going to enjoy my life right now. I am going to soak up the fruits of my labor and not just move to the next thing. I promise you the goalpost is always moving. It never stops. You're always going to want more. My therapist always challenges me too. She's like, okay, let's say you get that. Let's say I get a New York Times best-selling book out on the market and my podcast blows up and I'm on Spotify exclusive new podcasters and my pictures everywhere. Like, okay, and then what? Oh, maybe I want to become this and that. It's like, it just never stops, right? So for me, this period of realizing I have enough also made me realize I don't want to build a business just to become a millionaire and say I'm going to be a millionaire. I want to be able to look back at my life as if it was a movie and then be like, how many things did you get to try out and experience? That not everything you have to monetize, right? I want to go to culinary school for no other reason than I want to learn how to become a really good cook because I would love to learn to host dinner parties and cook for everyone. I wanted to do this for like 2 years and I just haven't been able to because of my travels, right? A cooking school, I can't be there for 3 or 4 weeks. I have to commit. I want to write a book. Do I have an MFA in writing? No. Can I self-publish on Substack and self-publish my own book and maybe just work on my skills and find a publisher and get a book deal? Yeah, maybe. And so I'm like, why not try that out? Why not try out as many things as you can? That's honestly what also motivated me with my athlete archetype earlier this year. I was very athletic when I was younger and I kind of just accepted that like, you're older now, you're not that athletic. That ship has sailed. And I'm like, why does it have to be that way? Why can't I get back into my athlete mindset? I used to love playing golf and tennis with my dad. We would go all the time to the golfing range. By the way, I'm like low-key really good at golf. My dad wanted me to play in college and he got me clubs for my 7th birthday. I was really good at golf. I have the Tiger Woods grip, which also means I have a pretty good hand-eye coordination. So I'm not that bad at tennis. And I played volleyball for 4 years. I used to do all these sports. I used to dance for years. And that's why I think now these things are so important to me is like, why can't I work towards that? Why can't I play golf on the weekends or take dance classes every single day like I used to do when I was younger? So this decompression period of reflecting and being like, you have enough and you're allowed to do other things that you don't monetize became honestly such a big focus for me that that's how I want to spend 2024. I want to write a book. I want to make this podcast incredible. And I want to do the things that I've been dying to do. I want to become a really good dancer. I want to be someone that I can like volley with someone in tennis and play for 3 hours on the weekend. This is who I want to be. And so I need to build my life and schedule that way. And I think this decompression period really helped me understand that. Speaking of blackouts to barbells, number 9 is that health really is wealth. I used to hate that saying. I was like, oh my God, shut up. It's so cliche and cheesy and trite. However, I started weightlifting this year. And I feel like weightlifting, this is a random example, but I feel like it makes you feel like a transformer, like an Autobot, where you're just kind of like hanging out and then you weightlift and you're like, brrr. You're like, oh my God, I'm like standing straighter. I'm walking better. I have better posture. I feel stronger. And I notice the tiniest little things where I can feel stronger, like so random, but I'm very tall. So getting out of the backseat of a car is really hard. Tall girls, DM me, you know this. I've actually broken my toe getting out of the back seat of a car. I'm also really clumsy, so that doesn't help. But I remember being like, this should not happen. And also my travels really motivated me to get in shape. Traveling is hard on the body. You are lugging your suitcase everywhere. You need to lift it overhead. You have to, if you're in Europe, they are not accessible friendly. They do not like escalators. They don't like elevators. You are carrying your luggage up like 100 flights of stairs. It is insane. So this really motivated me to take my health seriously. And that's when I hired a personal trainer. Quickly going back to like, ooh, that's bougie. Or like, I can't afford that. I want to remind you guys, I was living in truly some of the cheapest countries in the world. My personal trainer, Argentina, was $14 an hour. Okay. $14, I can assure you I have spent at Starbucks in one day. $14 is like one Uber ride in New York. So getting an hour with a trainer in Argentina for $14, yeah, that I could afford that. In Cape Town, it was like $22. In Peru, I think it was like $17. In comparison, when I was in Orlando, my trainer, I think, was like $80 to $90 an hour. So you can see I cut this by over 75%. So it was easy for me to invest in weightlifting and trainers because that was what I valued at the time, right? I knew I want to better my health. I know weight training helps so much with your health. I want to be stronger for my travels. Also, the things that I want to do, like I need to be in shape. When I'm traveling and people want to go on hikes or bungee jumping or run down to like this rock pool, I'm like, I don't want to be missing out on these things because I'm like, oh, I can't do it or I'm too slow or this and that. And honestly, the amount of obsessive hikers that I hung out with in Cape Town made me realize these people are going to keep inviting me hiking. I might need to like get in a little bit of shape to go on some of these hikes. So that really motivated me, as well as my future family. And I know this is a bit weird. You're like, what the you don't even have a partner. What are you talking about? I don't know what happened. Maybe it's a spirit baby coming in and speaking to me. But I started to think about, like, if I truly want to be a mom, and at this stage in my life, the way things are going, I might not be a mom until I'm like 36 or 37. I'm okay with that. I don't mind being like an older, cool mom. But I started thinking about my womb as like this sacred space. And this needs to be healthy for a baby. I know things get harder for you as you get older. And this like started to click with me where I'm like, whoa, you should check your fertility. You should see what your gut health is like. You should see if you're even like viable to carry a baby. So in Mexico City, I remember getting my annual gyno checkup and I was like, can we check my fertility? Like, is that weird? And she looked and she didn't have any concerns. There was like, I think a cyst somewhere, but she's like, I'm not worried about that, but you know, let's keep an eye on it. And just kind of recommended, hey, if you want to freeze your eggs, the earlier, the better. So all these things started coming in my mind. Like, I need to be in shape for my travels. If I want a child in the future, I need to take care of my body. And so outside of the weightlifting, I then hired a health coach. Shout out Mad Healthy. That's her name on Instagram. We did a gut health check. And I don't know if this was from like sometimes drinking the water in South America and eating like raw ceviche every day in Peru and changing countries all the time, especially in South America where the food is just different. My gut was unwell. I got the test back and I didn't know how to read it. It was very scientific. And I'm not kidding. There were these markers like green, yellow, red. And out of the 10 of them, like 8 were highly red, like 911 level alerts. And my coach had basically said, like, this is really serious. You know how sometimes you get these tests back and it still looks really bad? And they're like, oh, it's nothing to worry about. A little cleanse will fix it. Just start cutting this out. She was like, yeah, this is actually pretty serious. And I might even like recommend that you go to a doctor and get a colonoscopy. And the fact that she wasn't really reassuring me that everything was okay, and then just seeing all the red and seeing things like candida overgrowth and like a strain of E. coli and this. And I was like, this is like really bad. I guess I didn't think it was that bad because your skin, I feel like, reflects out of your gut health. And I feel very fortunate that I tend to have pretty good skin. And also I wasn't dealing with any like rash breakouts like I used to when I was younger. I just didn't have like that many digestive issues. And the reason I even worked with her was just to like elevate my health. So all of a sudden to have this red flag with my gut, I was like, holy shit. So I started working with her. I went on a bunch of supplements. I started this whole protocol. I actually stopped drinking for 3 months. That was insane. I went to a Halloween party. Halloween is like my favorite holiday. And we went to this huge party at Dracula's Castle. I remember thinking earlier in the year, if I ever do that, that's going to be like the craziest party of my life because we're just going to get so drunk and stay up till 5 a.m. What happened is we stayed up till 5 a.m. and all I had was water and mocktails. So I proved to myself, like, you actually can live without alcohol. You're fine. And I did that for a very long time. Now, I'm not someone who's going to say like I'm completely sober and I'm always not going to have a drink, but it has drastically changed how I drink. I definitely have had drinks in Romania, one too many at some point, but now I'm cognizant of this. Like, now I know, okay, well, you know, drinking might actually affect your gut more than you want to. But ever since this cleanse and ever since I kept following the protocol, and I think the not drinking for 3 months helped so much, I haven't done a gut test yet, but I can just tell that things are better. I don't burp as much. I know this is like TMI, but I used to burp a lot. I don't feel like I have that many digestive issues. There was a period too when I was in Albania and not drinking that I was sleeping like a baby. I feel like now I live in a co-living space and it's just a very high socialization month that has kind of gone out the window. But yeah, I've just taken my health more seriously. And I think because of like the clarity I had from trying to heal my gut, not drinking, taking time alone, taking a slower morning to myself, That's what ended up helping me finally develop like a daily writing practice and daily reading. I always make a joke that I'm a slow reader, which also makes no sense because I read 1,000 books in first grade. But last year, my goal was like read one book a month, and I think I read 3 in the entire year. So I was like, let's try this again. So 2024, I was like, let's try to read one book a month. And I remember thinking, how are you ever going to do that? You barely finished 3 in 2022. And I feel like because I finally had clarity with my mental health, my gut, I wasn't hungover, I wasn't tired, I could actually start enjoying reading again and dedicating time to it each day. So I'm happy to also report, I think I'm close to the 12 books in a year. I had a little slow period, but I'm back. And really, like, health is what's kept me going. For example, even in Romania right now, I can tell that I'm starting to like deplete a little bit of energy because I haven't been taking that great care of myself, especially in terms of sleep. I've been going to bed so late, like 3 a.m. I've been on my phone more. By the way, I deleted my Instagram for quite a while when I was in Albania, and I would only download it when I wanted to post something or check something really quick. And I gave myself 30 minutes and then we were done. So yes, health is wealth. Find a reason bigger than aesthetics, and I guarantee you will be kicked into gear to take your health more seriously. Okay, and the last one, we have a listener voice note. So let's tune in super quick and see what she has to say.
Hi, Chelsea. I want to ask you about loneliness. You travel so often and you're always far away from probably the people closest to you and your family. I wonder how you navigate loneliness in this day and age. It is so hard to sit with that emotion. And I'm curious, when your relationships change from country to country and your work is online and can be isolating as an entrepreneur, how do you navigate loneliness? And do you have any tips for people who experience this and are moving through loneliness and don't know how to grapple with that feeling?
Okay. So my experience with this is that I feel like a skill I have is I'm very good at making friends no matter where I am. There are also periods where I don't want to make friends. When I was in Albania, I very specifically had an intention that I do not want to meet anyone new. I don't even care if it's to like grab a coffee with someone. I am completely burned out from socializing, and I don't want that. So that's first, is like, there are times where I actually want to be lonely because I need to decompress. The other thing is that a lot of my friends live all over the world. So when I'm traveling, I do have the opportunity to see a lot of them. For example, 2 of my best friends live in England and Copenhagen. I saw my best friend earlier this year, right before she had her baby. And in 2 weeks, I'm going to Copenhagen to see my other friend. So to me, it's a blessing that I can travel like this because I get to see my friends in other countries. Also, because so many of my friends are digital nomads, we sometimes like accidentally overlap and then we're like, oh, cool, we get to spend these next 2 weeks together. So that's also why sometimes I don't feel lonely, because I know wherever I'm going, I will either find someone or someone will link me up with their friend. This just happened. I told my friend I was going to Copenhagen, even though I already have a friend there. This other girl was like, oh, I have a single friend there and she would love to like meet and go out if you want. I'm like, okay, let's do it. Or sometimes I'll post on Instagram and be like, hey, I'm going to Bucharest, Romania right now. Does anyone have recommendations of co-work spaces? Or like, let me know about what there is to do there. And usually what happens is someone will be like, don't have a co-work space recommendation, but one of my friends lives there. You guys would get along so well. You should hit her up and get a coffee. That's usually how I make friends. Also, Facebook groups are amazing. I'm in a Facebook group here in Romania, and there are really cool girls in there. And so sometimes you'll see people post and be like, hey, does anyone want to go to a bookshop and get a coffee? And all these people will comment, and it's so easy to make friends that way. This also just happened in Romania, what I said of the friend being like, oh, you should meet up with my friend. There was a girl I had never met before. We had a mutual friend. She saw her friend was coming to Romania and was like, Chelsea and you should meet up. And that night, I so happened to be hosting a dinner party. So she came over, and then we had the funnest night together. We spent all night together. We went out. We got coffee the next day. Like, it was such a fun time. This is why I don't feel lonely, because I honestly think if I were to trace this back to a reason, it's because I have so much evidence that I can make friends no matter where I go, and that it's not hard for me to bond with people. Now, in terms of like feeling homesick, I feel like I also don't really feel homesick because sorry to my hometown, but like, I can only really be there for 1 or 2 weeks. It's amazing in terms of like, there's a beach, It's incredibly affordable. There are things to do, but I just don't really love going home. And so I don't really feel that homesickness. And when it comes to family members, we usually do at least 1 to 2 family vacations a year. So I don't ever really feel lonely or away from my family. And if I do, I FaceTime them or call them. I have a family chat right now called OnlyFams, and we talk almost every day. So I think that's why I don't feel lonely either, is like I constantly have updates on what my siblings are up to. Sometimes some of us will just catch up and do like a sprint of voice notes and texts. I FaceTime my mom like every other week. And again, we're all seeing each other soon. This will be this trip coming up. We're all going to Madrid. And I think that will be honestly like the third or fourth time I've seen my family in the last, or at least my parents in the last year. So I think that's why I don't feel lonely either, because I know I'm going to see them. And voice notes are also your best friend. There are so many incredible people I've met while traveling. And we usually just keep in touch on WhatsApp and constantly send each other updates. That whole meme of like podcast voice notes. That's what I do with a lot of the friends I meet. I'm like, tell me what's going on. Give me the 411. There was a girl I lived with in Colombia. We only lived together for 3 weeks, but we got along really well. And we are still in touch. We update each other all the time about who we're dating, what's going on, what's happening with work. And this is just all through voice notes. I haven't physically seen her since February. And again, we met for 3 weeks, but this is what I do with a lot of my friends. I would say too, now that I'm talking about this out loud, I think I do put a lot of effort and investment into my friendships. I am checking in on the group text. I am messaging them being like, what's up? Tell me what's happening. I send birthday gifts to all my friends. If I'm close to them in the same country, I'll try to meet up and see them. So when it comes to loneliness, I don't know that I feel lonely in terms of like friendship or family. I think where I feel loneliness is in the terms of like a partner. So that definitely is hard to deal with sometimes, where I think it hits the most at night when I go to bed and I'm like, oh yeah, it would be nice to have someone here right now to cuddle with and wake up and spend Sunday together, lazy in bed and walk around and get a coffee. Like, yeah, of course. Like I do miss that. And it's what I said in an earlier bullet though, like I'm also just not willing to settle for anybody that can fill that spot to be a warm body. So it's something I have to be patient about. And honestly, sometimes those weekend hookups will fill the spot for a very quick period and I'll get my little cuddle fix and that's that. But a point I want to end on is that I think it kind of ties to loneliness is you never really know the impact that you make on someone's life that is not about business or financials or income or status. So you might teach someone a new phrase or how to cut an onion or remember the best hug that they gave you. And when I look back in this year, if you were to be like, name the like quick fire, like top 5 moments of this year, they're all with people. They're not like, and I've done some really cool things this year. I have flown over pyramids and hot air balloons. I have ridden on horsebacks on the mountains of Colombia. I have taken crazy cooking classes in Peru. Like I've done a lot of cool things. But if you were to be like, quickly scribble down 5 things, I only remember right now, like the conversations I've had with people and how I felt in those moments. I remember loving Peru because we all would go to dinner all the time and have like these amazing chats. And that's something I remember is like very specifically where I was sitting, what we were talking about, the warm, fuzzy feeling I had. I'll never forget like my roommate and I bonding so much in Mexico City and spending like every night watching shitty shows together and cooking our dinner. We would walk to Pilates together every day. Like those are the things I remember. So if I can remember that so easily, it just shows me that I need to double down on those things in 2024 and continue to invest in my friendships. There are still times where I'm like, am I a good friend? Like I haven't checked in on that person. I haven't called. And you know, it is hard when you look at the wheel of life to be a 10 out of 10 in all those things. It's hard to be financially savvy and a good friend and a good partner and a good entrepreneur and a good sister. Like some things do fall to the wayside sometimes where it's like, actually, I have to focus on my business because finances are important right now. Or you know what? I can take a step back. I've set myself up. I can just spend the holidays with my friends and family. And that's kind of how I like plan my time in life too. To sum up your question, I think the reason I don't feel lonely a lot is because I'm constantly initiating conversations and checking in with people. So it's pretty hard to feel lonely when you're always in touch with someone. Like I'm going to pull up my phone right now and let's just look at my WhatsApp and see what's happening. Okay, so my first text message here is an international meetup group I met in Bucharest. The next one is a friend I met in Bucharest. The next one is my remote year chat. The next one is my VA. The next one is a friend. The next one is a friend. Like, this is what I'm saying. All these things are friends right now, and I have 5 new messages. So this is why I never really feel lonely, because I'm keeping the WhatsApp active and hot and live. Now, I am trying to think of, like, if I felt that way at any point in the year, because sometimes when I'm talking, I'm just speaking from, like, my experience in the last 4 to 6 weeks. And I do feel like when I get really, really lonely, I'll call my mom and try to find a piece of home that feels familiar. Because usually loneliness comes from like a lack of connection or interaction and maybe a little bit of like uncomfortability and unfamiliarity. So maybe in Albania, I felt this way where I was like, I don't know anybody. I don't know this place. It's dead. I don't have friends here. I don't really want to make friends because I'm tired. I probably did feel that way. And I remember just going to the beach and being like, well, the beach reminds me of home. I'm from a beach town. I called my mom more. I started journaling. I started doing morning pages, actually, which helped a lot. I think that's a whole lesson I should have put in here is I started doing like very seriously 750 words a day, which they equate to being 3 pages of morning pages. And I got so much out. And I think connecting with myself in that way helped me not feel lonely. And then sometimes, yeah, I just look at pictures from home. I went to the beach and collected shells and like brought them back to my Airbnb. I cook and I try to like cook things that maybe remind me of home. Or I'll just, I don't know, I find familiarity. Like I'll watch a TV show and be like, okay, this is familiar. This is familiar. Like get back in that comfort zone. Okay, my God, what a deep dive episode. I hope this is helpful for you. I hope you took away something from this episode, whether that's about finances or health or loneliness. Whatever floated your boat, let me know on Instagram. You can DM me at Chelsea Rife. You can email me info@chelsearife.com. And just a reminder, anyone who leaves a review the month of December, I'm entering you into a giveaway to win a 30-minute one-on-one with me. So just go to Apple Podcasts, write your review on my show, screenshot it, send it to me, info@chelsearife.com or DM me, and I will enter you into that giveaway to win a one-on-one with me. All right, y'all. Thanks so much for listening. Stay tuned. My most popular episode of the year is coming out next week, which is my business year in review. I cannot wait for you to hear that one. And as always, thank you, thank you, thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.